And we're up. All right. It's 95.9 The Fox, Fairfield County, live and local. We are presented by the Sono Collection. My name is John Kamal, and I am hanging out with the fellas in Remember September at RemSept. What do we got? What's happening?
What's up? What's up, buddy?
So we got Chris, we got Jay, and we got Eric. We've got, let's see, we've got Jay to my left, your right, and then Eric next to him, and then below me, we have Chris. Thank you guys for being here.
Just below you.
Just below me.
Below me.
So, now, before we get into you guys, I should mention that you are playing this Thursday at the Sono Collection for 95.9 The Fox. So, if you're watching this, make sure you check that out. Jay, can you turn the sound down just a little bit? I'm hearing a bit of echo coming back on me.
On you? Yep.
Yeah, just my voice because I'm loud and obnoxious, and that's just what happens.
Actually, I run it through the sub too.
It's fine. It's fine. I can't hear myself now at all. So, all right. So to get into this, you guys are a literal band of brothers. The three of you guys are all, you know, brothers. How does Eric's adopted? Right. Well, I mean, of course, everybody knows that.
I am so much better looking.
That's the comeback for that comment. That's the forever comeback for that comment. So, how did the band get started? When did you guys discover music and then playing music with each other?
Well, it kind of started with me. I was a kid and I got a guitar. I was about 14 years old. And, you know, as any teenager, you know, you're dealing with emotions and stuff. And I turned into music. I started, I kind of had a niche for it. Yeah. And actually what happened was I went into the studio. So my father had pitched an idea. He had a buddy of his that was an engineer. He said, "Do you want to record some songs?" So I, you know, obviously was, you know, very excited to do so. And then what happened was I actually ended up breaking my wrist. So I got a really bad compound fracture in my wrist, and I couldn't play my guitar parts. And Chris happened to be an incredible guitar player. Come on, you're not getting caught.
We were young. Man.
Take him when you get him. All right.
All right.
You got to
come in and do my guitar parts, and then from there on out, you know, Chris and I kind of started off with a band. And then as Eric got older, picked up the bass and kind of jumped on.
I was an incredible bass player, is what he meant to say.
As most 10-year-olds are.
Yeah, that's pretty much. I mean the short version of it.
So to get, I mean, just to get the chronology together, it's Chris and then Jay and then Eric in order of age, right?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. I'm the oldest. Yep.
How far apart? Did you hear that? Yeah. Chris was like, "Yeah, I'm the oldest. I'm the oldest."
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Make sure
it's pretty obvious if you know us.
That's true. Although
that based on maturity,
because he's so wise and mature.
That's true. Mature. That's how the French say it. But. What was I going to ask? I have too much fun with you guys.
So I'm 2 years older than Jay.
Okay. All right. Yeah. The age gap. That's what I was going to ask.
Eric's 6.5 years younger. So 6.5 between the oldest and the youngest.
Okay. All right. So Eric, you're 4 years younger than Jay.
Jay is 4.5 years older than me, and Chris is 6.5 years older than me. So they're 2 years apart.
Okay. Okay. All right.
And you could have guessed, I'm sure, who the middle child was.
I mean, naturally, it's the one constantly seeking attention, the lead singer himself, Jay Schott. That's great. We love that.
When he was younger, it was actually a Gandhi tattoo, but
what's it really?
Over the years, Buddha got fatter.
That's well, he's prosperous.
Yeah, I said, as I get bigger, I'm just going to get like Russian dolls. And I'm just going to start lining them up. It's going to be about 40 Buddhas.
It just means you're doing well, Jay. It just means you're being.
It's not fat; it's power. You know?
That's right. So, give me the long version, though. I mean, so like, when did you guys first come together as a full band? Like, all right, we're doing this. Let's start gigging.
Chris,
yeah, probably 2004, 2003 or 2004. Like Jay said, he basically put together a his first CD, and I had learned all the parts, and now we're like, all right, we have the CD, you know, what do we do with it? So we started going out playing acoustically and just kind of, you know, really learned on the on
Mike the, the Huntington Street Cafe.
Yeah, Huntington Street Cafe was probably our first gig. I mean, we started doing some
open mic nights. Every Wednesday.
Yeah, we started doing open mic nights, and then the band formed. And then obviously over the years, it changed quite a bit. We started out with another electric guitar player, so I could kind of learn like on the job, really. You know, over the years, we've really just been kind of road tested. We've played tons and tons and tons of gigs. So, you know, but yeah, I really started with just Jay and I, acoustic, open mic, kind of like everybody else. And then we were fortunate. Town of Trumbull in 2006 had a really big show with Chicago. And being a local band and knowing a lot of people in Trumbull, we were able to get to open for Chicago. In 2006, just us and them for the town concert, we were like, you know, felt like way in over our heads. It's just unbelievable. It's, you know, we were going basically from Huntington Street Cafe. And,
yeah, it was like our seventh gig. you're opening for Chicago.
So talk about that. Like, how did that happen? So you're doing open mics, and then all of a sudden, you're opening for like Chicago. Like you said, seven gigs later. Like, talk about that process. How did that happen?
Our father, you know, we've lived in Trumbull our entire lives, and my father's done a lot of work with the town throughout Trumbull Little League and stuff, and you know, doing all kinds of like, you know, just various stuff. And as being an insurance guy, he has a lot of friends. And know people and stuff, and he was able to. Fortunately for us, we have a father that supports, you know, his son's dreams, and did it. You know, tried to, you know, figure out a way to do it, and I think we had a bet that he wasn't going to pull it off, and he won that bet.
Yeah, he had the first selectman come out to one of our shows, actually, Daniel Street Cafe in Milford. We basically put the show together. We put the show together just so we could have the first selectman come check us out. And we actually had Vinny Penn. I don't know if you remember
Vinny
him.
Penn, there's a radio.
From KC101 did a stand-up set for like 40 minutes before we went on. And, yeah, we did a show there. First selectman came to check it out just to make sure that we weren't going to, like, go up there and embarrass ourselves. You know, right. We probably played almost every original song we knew there for the set because we only had, you know, maybe 10 songs as a band, full band. So, yeah.
Well, some of the songs I was actually writing at the time. Like, I had just ideas because I was a young kid at that time. I was, you know, like cranking out tunes like, you know, 3-4 a day, and we were like literally still in the process of putting those songs together. And just so I mean, those I remember those last, you know, like the 2 weeks leading up to that show, we were like getting together, just trying to get these songs together. You know, I mean, you know, as a guitar player and playing in bands, that, you know, songs take time to marinate and meld till they get to a good spot. You know?
You need to play them live for a little while before they're really done. Yeah, yeah, you can write them all you want.
Everybody kind of knows their spot and feels it out.
They need fine tuning.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not everybody's blessed to have a bass player that just knows how to play that tasty little.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Well, so what was the size? What was the size of that first gig in Chicago?
I think it was about 7,500 to 10,000.
Yes, I was going to say 7,000.
What?
I don't. Yeah, so it was right in Trumbull, right on the Indian Ledge. They stopped doing it since, but they used to do a big concert every summer. And so we did one other one there with Train, which was awesome. And that one was actually
because they had just came when we did the Train one, and they had literally just hit with that Hey Soul Sister song. So that
they had kind of disappeared for a while, where, you know, it has like drops of Jupiter, and then they kind of disappeared for like 7-8
right.
years. Town of Trumbull booked them, and then Hey Soul Sister came out like 2 weeks later. And, you know,
like half the price, more than half.
So all of a sudden it went from like being like, oh, yeah, those are those guys with that song from like 5 years ago.
Well,
to
like, oh. They like doubled. Literally, like, as soon as that dropped, like that song dropped, it literally, like I said, the ticket sales, they ran out of tickets. Like it was so overpacked.
Yeah, there was supposed to be, I think, 8,000 maximum. And there was like 12 for that or something like that. So they got in big trouble, I think.
So how do you, describe that feeling. Cause I feel like, you know, for a lot of aspiring musicians, like the thing that you dream about is that moment of stepping out onto the big stage for the first time. So you're doing these open mics and you're playing for like what, 10, 15 people capacity. And then all of a sudden you're playing for 7,500. What's that feel like?
I think we were like
talkative over here. He's not on my ear off.
Yeah, and I think we were like too young. I mean, I feel like I'd be more nervous now because back then we didn't even know what we were like getting ourselves into, sort of.
Right.
The one thing I would say is you kind of expect the big stage, like the sound, to be like huge, and up on stage, especially outside, it's a lot quieter. I was like, one thing I was shocked about was how, you know, it's pretty quiet up on the big stage like that. You expect, you know, this huge, it's loud out in front of the, you know, hot front of house, but up on the stage it was definitely different, you know, than what I expected.
Eric, how
level? Go ahead, go, John.
Oh no, I was just gonna say, Eric, how old are you at this point?
I was 20.
Okay.
It was like literally like 2 weeks before my 21st birthday.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Jay, I'm sorry. What were you saying?
Nothing. It was not, it just kind of floated by. Don't worry about it.
Okay. All right. Well, so, I mean, you guys have an awesome resume, like when you dig into it. Cause I mean, you know, like the train thing, Chicago, and you guys, I was just going to say, you guys opened for Dave too.
Yeah.
I mean, like what's the secret to, you know, just for aspiring bands out there, what's the secret to the success?
I mean, networking, definitely.
Yeah.
Talk
definitely
more about that. Yeah,
it's all about, I mean, still at the end of the day, it's still a business. So you got to be able to sell yourself, you know what I mean? And you got to be able to kind of find the right people. You know, it takes a lot of hard work, you know? And that's how we got to that was that we made a relationship. There was a lady that came down, they saw us at Mohegan Sun. We were doing a traditional cover set at the Lansdowne Pub. And her name was Emily, and she actually did all the booking and stuff at the Live Nation venue that we played at. And she really loved us. And she kind of kept in contact with us. We played up there the first year, and we did a great job, you know, in their eyes. And we just always kind of kept on that relationship. You know, we always kind of, you know, always like for Christmas, we'd send them something and a thank you. And through that, we were one of the only bands that they kept booking. And now, you know, they actually give us a choice of, you know, bands that we can play with, which is a pretty awesome position to be in.
Yeah.
And to get that kind of exposure. So we saw that like Dave Matthews was coming up. He said, hey, you know, can we get it for the Dave Matthews set? And Emily, you know, got right on it and booked us. And it was awesome. And it's, you know, it's what every musician dreams of, you know, being able to play on a stage with their idols, you know. So.
It really is such a cliche, but like if you really don't know who's in the audience when you're playing. So like it could be someone, you know, that does the booking at a Live Nation venue.
So yeah, you never know who always, people are. You know,
go at it.
Even at a dive bar, man, if there's only three people in the room, one of those three people might know, you know,
exactly.
I know somebody.
I mean, don't go, I wouldn't say like as a writer and aspiring musician, don't go banking on it, but I mean, it could always be there. It's always, you know, because if you're banking on it, you know, and you're hoping for it, I mean, it's a long shot, but you never know, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And, you know, always go out, put your, you know, best formers together, and yeah, like we're saying. There can always be somebody, you know, that's standing there that you have no idea does what he does.
Yeah. So what about songs? What about like songwriting and stuff? Because, you know, I mean, Jay, you mentioned that the band kind of grew out of you writing songs by yourself. You guys are such a strong cover act as well as having great original material. Did it start like purely as like a project for your original material, or was it like, what did it start with the covers and you decided to incorporate that later on?
Yeah, it was really just a hobby for that. You know, it was a hobby that I started and I picked up, and I just kind of, I mean, ever since I was like 4 or 5 years old, like I started out as a keyboard player, and music was something that, you know, for me, I was blessed it came naturally with it, and it was just always a passion of mine. You know, like I said, It started out where I would just learn tunes and sing, and I loved to learn to play. And then as you learn frames of chords and stuff, I learned kind of how to theory off of learning other people's music and kind of, you know, was able to kind of play around with different progressions and stuff. And I had a knack for, you know, writing poetry and you know, lyrics. And I just started kind of putting mainframes to songs together. And I'm one of those fortunate people that are, you know, like I said, is blessed to have two brothers that are great musicians as well. And, you know, I kind of can bring these ideas in. They can build on those ideas, and then they become songs. You know, they build into these beautiful, beautiful pieces that, you know, we're very proud of.
Right.
Yeah, at the beginning, gig-wise, though, you know, the open mics, you obviously go play original stuff. But then, you know, we basically learned covers to fill up enough to go play a gig where we can go get paid, you know, paid for a bar gig. And then over the years, we've just added to our catalog of cover songs, you know, again, just to, you know, we, like Jay said before, Mohegan Sun's a place to play a lot. Obviously, you go to a casino on a Friday night, and you know, they want cover stuff. So you know, but we're kind of stubborn in that even when we do a place like that, we'll still play 25-30% original music because, you know, we had to do enough jam stuff and upbeat stuff that half the time people don't even realize it's not cover stuff.
Of course.
You know,
of course.
Layered in with other songs that kind of have a similar vibe or whatever.
And medley stuff in there too, which you guys are so good at. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, I think that's, you know, I don't know if it's negatively impacted the band, but, you know, kind of having an identity of our cover band sometimes, we're at the casino and we're saying we're an original band and then we're playing, you know, an hour set of covers. So, I mean, it's, you know. If you want to be paid in Connecticut there, you're not going to go out playing all originals every, you know, four nights a week and find places that are going to, you know.
You got to do both. You got to be able to do both. Yeah,
yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, especially if you want to make money because it's still a business. You know, if you want to keep things going, gear breaks down and stuff, and you need to be able to fund that stuff. And as you know, in the Connecticut, you know, the Connecticut live local scene is a tough scene. Most of the days now, you know, when you're playing the bars, like Chris had just mentioned, people want to jump along and sing along to Sweet Home Alabama all night, which is great. You know,
sure.
But you got to use that as tools to springboard you forward into what you really want to do. And pushing live music, your own original music, is very difficult these days, you know, about getting out and getting on the road. It takes time. It's a grind, you know?
Well, that's one of my favorite things about you guys. And it's, I think Jay, you've described yourselves as like the basic bros of like the black rock music scene. Cause you will play anything. Like it doesn't like, there's so much snobbery in among the music scene that I've been guilty of myself, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, you know, you guys will play Florida Georgia Line, like whatever, dude. I don't care. Like, yeah. why would I care? Talk about that.
So just to chime on that, like I always say, and this is the way I always pitch a song, is I say no song is a bad song. You know what I mean? Yeah, I love all aspects of music. So, I mean, we'll go up there and, like, I think you guys were there. We were playing with you guys with Mojo. And we just started playing Killing in the Name of. And I was like, yeah, we'll play it. Like, we'll throw it together. And we threw it together. I remember, like, you and Yost were, like headbanging. Like, I don't know, the thing. Like, dude.
Started
like,
moshing.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I mean, I think that comes from all of us. We all come from, you know, different musical backgrounds. But we're all music enthusiasts and you know, very extensive into what we listen to. We don't just like listen to heavy metal, you know. We don't just listen to, you know, classic rock. We listen to all aspects of music, and I think that kind of shows, you know.
Well, so, how would you characterize the sound of the band? I mean, like, if you had to, and that's such a I hate that question,
rock.
But it's, what was that?
Slacker rock.
Hold on, say it one more time. It wasn't coming through.
Oh, I said slacker rock.
Slacker rock. Okay. Okay.
No,
I
like
that.
You know, jam rock.
I can get behind that.
We tend to smoke some happy plants and make some noise.
Happy plants are nice. We like happy plants.
Yeah, because I feel like we have, you know, a lot of our songs have like a pretty much a, you know, sort of, I don't want to say pop, but, you know, your traditional rock mainframe. But then we do have some, you know, quite a bit of jams and stuff, but nothing, you know, way out there, like, you know, space jams, that kind of thing.
Sure. What about like influences, just like even just personally for the three of you guys as musicians, who did you try to emulate, whether it was early or later in your playing?
I mean, I always fell in love with Dave Matthews, and not only as the band, but just as is the way he moves on stage and like the way he carries the energy and like kind of his goofy little white boy dance that he does, you know?
Yeah. That weird little two-step he has.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, that always kind of caught my eye. And, like, you know, just, like, how people don't just get into the music, especially at a live show. Like, people see what they hear, too, you know? So you got to be able to have that, especially for me as the front guy.
Yeah.
But, you know what I mean? You need to have that kind of something to keep your eye going, you know? Because who wants to just sit there and watch a guy play his guitar on his bed, you know? You know, you need to
edit. It's got to be fun.
What's that?
It's got to be fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't doubt it. You know. So I mean, some people can get away with it, but like, you know, like I said, I was always attached to just how their whole presentation of their music came together. You know, as far as from the, you know, top to the bottom, from sound to how incredible the band is tight wise and the way their music moves. It, you can't really put a finger on it. You call it jam band, but it's got hints of this, hints of that. And I just kind of was always enamored with the way they worked as a whole and worked as a unit.
Yeah.
So that would probably be one of my major influences was that on my end. I don't know, Eric.
I mean, in terms of base, I would definitely say probably, you know, James Jamerson, Paul McCartney.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, James Jamerson was just so tight in the pocket and just so melodically sound. You know, it's really hard to find a bass player like that. Even like Phil Lesh, it's so melodically sound.
Yeah.
But still so tight in the pocket. So I've always really wanted to emulate that.
That ability. I love Phil Lesh as an example of that too. That ability to be wide open, but also right, but also keep keep the groove going. It's hard, man.
He really feels as opposed to just, you know, going through the motions. So
sure.
Well, the bass is such a great instrument. It's right, an instrumental instrument into the foundation of the music, because it's not only you're playing melodic notes, but you're holding down the pocket with the drummer. To be able to kind of do that tastefully.
It's a fine line to walk.
Yeah, and James Jamerson is, you know, one of those guys that, you know, it's so beautiful. You know, it's genius, like the way he puts his, you know, the bass lines together.
I think Beethoven said it's not about the notes you play, it's about the notes you don't. So
isn't that Miles Davis?
Maybe.
It sounded good though.
It did sound good.
It was believable.
I saw it on Facebook like 2 days ago.
We are on the internet, somebody's fact checking.
It happened true.
Man, this band—they don't know their shot.
That literally made me laugh so hard. I pulled the cord out of my headphones. So, Chris, what about you?
Oh, I mean, yeah, the usual suspects on guitar. You know, Jimi Hendrix, RV. Newer bands like Humphreys McGee, they're crazy guitar players.
Yeah.
You know, what about that Italian
and
guy?
Two of them too. You would never. This guy Marco Spoli, he's like a crazy Italian guitar player.
He's like one of those YouTube guys.
It's amazing what you can dig up on YouTube, you know. So
right.
I mean, I spend a lot of time. I mean, I practice a lot, but I spend so much time like just watching, whether it's tutorials or just music in general, just watching and trying to soak it in without even having a guitar, you know, in my hand. And I think that helps, you know, kind of hearing stuff and then being able to try to figure out how to make it sound like that on the guitar, you know.
If you do it often enough, it really is. It's like osmosis. Like it'll come out in your playing just purely by listening to it.
Yeah, I'm lucky because over the years, the band with our type of music, I mean, I kind of have the liberty of kind of messing around and, you know, trying stuff out all the time. So while we're playing live, you know.
Well, I'm kind of with that. Like, when I pitch stuff, I say, hey, no idea is a bad idea unless it comes from Chris.
and then he introduces the same idea like 5 minutes later. He's like,
That's a lead singer move right there. That's a little brother move.
Been living in this kid's shadow my entire life.
The poor middle child. Now you stand at the middle of the stage. That's what they get.
Yeah, exactly. I told our new drummer that we just got in October of last year. I told him, I said, man, you get the best seat in the house right between the bass and the guitar player, bud.
Boom. Right there.
Staring at my ham hocks.
The best possible angle. Dude, you know, I feel bad.
I was lactose intolerant and I eat a bowl of ice cream before every show.
That's awful.
I'm only serious.
I mean, I feel bad because I could talk to you guys forever, but I want people to be able to hear your music. And as of right now, we are, I think, 2 minutes away from three songs in a row of yours being played on 95.9 The Fox. So for the people who are watching right now, you know, this is it's Remember September. And if you dug these guys' energy and you haven't listened to them before, check them out because Fairfield County Live and Local is starting right this very second. And you're going to get three songs in a row from these guys. And, you know, make sure you check out their two albums that are available on iTunes and Spotify, The Roads We Travel. I don't talk for a living. It's okay. And Full Circle. Guys, thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thank you.
Thursday. Come on out Thursday.
Yeah, make sure. Yes, make sure you come out Thursday to the Sono Collection from 5 to 7. These guys are going to be playing for 2 hours. Live music is not dead in Fairfield County. You can get some live music this Thursday.
The new Holy Trinity, the Shot Brothers.
That's right, the Shot Brothers. Fellas, stick around for a sec after I take us off live. But for everyone watching, thank you. Thank you for supporting live and local music. Go listen to 95.9 The Fox. Or if you're not in Fairfield County, 95.9TheFox.com. You can hear 3 in a row from these guys. We'll catch you next time.
Peace and love.